We're back at Pod Summit with Mike Boych and Bud Colligan. We are now going to continue our two-part series with Ron Conway on angel investing in Silicon Valley. The first series, we talked about Ron's background and his basics of angel investing, what have been some of his best and worst investments, and the value add of venture capitalists. And now we're going to go into a little bit more about how he builds his network, words of wisdom for entrepreneurs, what he looks for in a company, and how he evaluates companies to make investments. So Ron, you're a larger than life personality, and
thank you, bud.
And you've got so many friends in the Valley and everything, including Mike and myself. But how do you go about cultivating your network of people? Because you're a real people person. And that's critical to your business as an angel. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is it? What do you do? What is it that you cultivate? And how do you reach out to so many people and stay in touch with them?
Well, I think it's all about cultivating and maintaining relationships, because relationships is what it's all about. If you use Silicon Valley as an example, there's probably 500 key investment professionals in Silicon Valley. And if you can maintain good relationships with that group, you can do a world of good for the entrepreneurs that you're representing. But where I formed most of my relationships was when we started Angel Investors LP with the goal of investing only in internet startups in Silicon Valley in 1998 and 1999, and we actually went out and formed relationships with all the founders of the key internet companies in the Valley and got those founders to be investors in the fund and therefore refer us deal flow and help mentor our entrepreneurs. So we had investors like Mark Andreessen, who was then at Netscape, Pierre Omidyar and Jeff Skull at eBay, Amazon was an investor. Many, many people at Yahoo were investors. And so we cultivated these relationships so that when we made investments in internet startups, we could call on the existing leaders in the internet field to help and mentor our companies and build meaningful relationships with our portfolio companies. So in addition to helping these entrepreneurs get funded, we also helped them build partnerships with Yahoo, AOL, Amazon, eBay, and Netscape at the time, which were crucial to their success.
I think that you and I first met at least 15 years ago, and you had a pretty nice lifestyle then, if I remember correctly, and you've had tremendous success since then. So how do you stay motivated now, and what really motivates you?
What really motivates me now is continuing to watch and be involved with the innovation in Silicon Valley. I'm 55 now, it's even more interesting to me to go watch these super young startups in the Valley. You know, people like Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, who's 21 years old, and watch their thought process, see how smart they are, and help them build their companies. Even though they have a lot of raw knowledge themselves, they don't have the operational experience, and that's where we can step in and help. But at the same time, really enjoy watching the innovation of what they're creating. When I met Sean Fanning from Napster, he was 18 years old and a resident of California for 1 month, and he had no idea that he was upending, you know, a $10 billion industry. You know, if he did, he'd have run for the hills. But it's interesting to watch these entrepreneurs mature and to be part of it. It's very, very exciting and motivating.
So Ron, let's turn to a few words of wisdom for entrepreneurs now and look at some of the concrete things we could do to help entrepreneurs. First of all, let's just start out with a broad question, which is, What kind of technologies or companies do you think are interesting to look at right now? And what is your deal flow saying about exciting ideas in Silicon Valley right now?
Silicon Valley, I believe, right now is at an inflection point in innovation and creativity. I think it's very akin to 1998. You know, 1998, I think there was an explosion of innovation in the Valley brought on by Netscape and the whole birth of the consumer internet. And then we had the bubble burst, but now we've had the rebirth of the internet with Google and Yahoo monetizing search results through advertising. Yahoo with Overture, Google with AdWords and AdSense. So now there's a way to monetize and track success of commercial activity on the web that you cannot do with TV and radio. TV and radio today is a $30 billion industry, and those ad dollars are migrating extremely quickly to the internet, and that has caused a rebirth of innovation in all kinds of affiliated consumer opportunities here in Silicon Valley. So we have the whole social networking phenomenon. MySpace and Facebook are part of that. We have blogging and RSS, where individuals can become journalists.
Like us.
Exactly. We have we have the podcasting revolution with PodTech, which just got a VC funding today. Congratulations. And the amount of innovation is huge. I think the next wave of innovation is going to be video on the internet. So we invested in a company called Pure Networks, which is the corporate owner of a website called Stupid Videos, where users stack rank what's basically My Home Funniest Videos, the TV show, basically moves that to the internet. But as time goes on, there's going to be more and more video broadcasting on the internet, and there'll be what is tantamount to AdSense for video, where when somebody's watching video, there'll be very sophisticated software that will be context sensitive and know what video you're watching and be able to serve up ads relevant to the video that you are watching. I think that could be another multi-billion dollar opportunity for innovation in Silicon Valley, and it's at absolutely ground zero. Everyone's thinking about it. I've made a couple of investments in this area, but I think it's another multi-billion dollar industry. There's a company in LA called SpotRunner that is doing this for the physical TV market, but it's got a complete web interface where you can go pick a local ad from a library of pre-made ads and then on the internet devise an entire ad schedule that then SpotRunner goes and runs for you very, very economically, that will allow local merchants to advertise on cable TV and broadcast networks that was never available before in an economic manner. I see that entire model also moving completely to the internet. It's just an example of a huge opportunity. Plus, I think the quality of search itself is going to improve dramatically. You know, Google is not happy with the search results that they produce today. And consumers, as they get more educated, aren't happy with the search results that they see today. So you're going to see huge increases in the quality of search, which will increase consumer adoption of search even further and grow this market even more.
And will that quality be through specialization, vertical search, or do you think it'll remain a horizontal proposition?
I think you're going to see improvements in horizontal search, which is really the dominant way that you conduct search today, is either through Yahoo, Google, MSN, or Ask Jeeves. But At the same time, vertical search sites are going to start sprouting up. For example, in healthcare, there's a site called Cosmix, where they're focusing just on one vertical. There's two real estate vertical sites, called one called Zillow and one called Trulia, an Excel investment, Bud's firm.
I have an angel investment in Cosmix, too.
And
just because I know Venki and Anand.
I'm in the same fund.
Yeah, Cambrian Ventures. Yeah.
But so there is going to be an explosion in vertical search of all kinds. If you look at shopping as a vertical, with Nextag, Price Grabber, and Become.com, there's already vertical search for shopping. And I don't think anyone even realizes that there's already a multi-billion dollar explosion in that. Yep. And that's vertical search. But it's going to go to medical, real estate, loans, investing, huge, huge amounts of opportunity. And Google and Yahoo can't cover all those. So there'll be many, many startups that sprout up and are very successful.
So I was doing a little mental math. I think, you know, in our business, at most venture firms, if you do 2 to 3 to maybe 4 investments a year, you're considered to be on a rocking pace. So you're about 15 times as productive maybe as the average venture capitalist. So tell us about how do you evaluate a company given the amount of time, the amount of time that implies you can spend? Is it, how much of it is the plan? How much of it is the intangibles? Or tell us how you look at them.
Well, I do make a lot of investments a year, but I only invest in 10% of the ones I look at. So I am actually extremely judgmental and decisive. But the companies that I meet with, the first thing that I look at is, what do I think of the entrepreneur themselves? You know, are they driven? Are they passionate? Are they humble? Are they good, articulate people?
And sometimes passionate and humble don't go very well together.
Right. we try and find entrepreneurs who are passionate and humble, which is hard to find.
Bud, yeah, you're describing Bud.
But we look for that. When Bud was at Macromedia, he fit that category. But these entrepreneurs, you know, if I like their character, they've passed the first litmus test. And their character is the first litmus test. It's not what the company does. That's, for me, the second priority. So if I like the entrepreneur, then I'll go and suss out the idea itself. And then, because I'm not technical, if the company gets that far in the due diligence process, I have about 10 what I call tech junkies who are very technical but are marketing savvy, who love to just look at all the deal flow they can possibly see, and they evaluate the technical merits of the investment. So if I get yes votes back from them, then I'm probably gonna invest in the company. And about 20% of the time, I actually lead the round, which is a lot more effort. And 80% of the time, I'll just invest with whatever group is investing. And, you know, the typical angel invests, you know, $50,000 to $75,000 per investment. So you got to find 6 or 7 if you're raising $500,000, and then double that if you're raising $1 million. But once I decide to invest, I've really bought into the entrepreneur, and I will go find other people to round out the amount of money they're raising. And I have a small group of investors who follow me into each investment, which is helpful to the entrepreneur, because with little or no additional meeting time, they can raise another $300,000 or $400,000 and get on with building the company.
You must have a standard Ron Conway term sheet, too, just given the time that you have to spend on each of these deals.
Definitely, definitely. And then I have a back office that processes all the docs, so I don't get involved in any of the clerical, because that would be too time-consuming.
And do you structure these as bridge loans to a venture round, or are they a round unto a series of stock unto themselves?
About 60% of the deals that I see today are valuation deals, valued at anywhere from $3 to $5 million pre-valuation. And then the balance would be bridge loans, where typically the entrepreneur is a little more experienced, has a little more leverage, so they're willing to let, well, they have enough leverage to pass off the valuation exercise to when they raise their venture round. And then you just get a discount to the venture round when you invest in a bridge. But that can be less attractive to the angels,
right,
depending on what the valuation ends up being.
So, Ron, we're about out of time now, but I wanted to maybe have you leave us and the entrepreneurs in our audience with one last question, and that's any words of wisdom for entrepreneurs as they're building companies, whether they're coming to an angel or whether they're coming to a VC, or just general words of advice about how to build a company.
Well, the best words of advice that I would offer to an entrepreneur is be a listener and be flexible to change, because adapting to change is very, very important in a startup. They never, ever turn out the way you plan. But an entrepreneur who's willing to listen and be humble and be flexible and adapt to change typically will be successful, because they'll be able to weave through the bumps in the road that they run into.
Well, that was a great first show for us, Ron. You've given our audience a lot of food for thought. And Mike, I guess we're ready to sign off.
We've hit the jackpot with Ron as our first guest. There's no doubt.
All right, Ron. Thanks so much.
Ron. You're welcome.